On today's episode, we're going to be covering entrepreneurship and life in the fast lane. We got celebrity guest Latino hip-hop artists here today. Studio B, downtown San Jose, Silicon Valley, guys. Let's go. It's going to be a great show.
It's Mauricio Mejia live. Entertainment guru, Silicon Valley entrepreneur, author, and speaker. It's Mauricio Mejia live.
So I want to welcome everyone today, episode number 6, Mauricio Mejia Live, season 3. That's right, guys. Very excited about today's show. We got a very special guest. It's very special to me as well, because growing up in Southern California and Los Angeles, if it wasn't for music that resonated to me or to the people that I was growing up with, it probably wouldn't be here today. So I want to welcome today Mellow Man Ace. It's a pleasure and an honor to have you here, my brother, Latino, my Latino brother. So it's an honor, man.
Thank you
for making the time. I know we had a show the night before, and luckily it wasn't like the crazy shows back in the day where the next thing we find out, we're the next day and the party still keeps going, man.
Yeah, so, no.
But no, thank you for being up here. You're up in Silicon Valley, this capital of the world in technology. This is home to Facebook, Google. All the major media players are all living here in San Jose, in the region, Silicon Valley. And so, yeah, man. So wanted to dive right in, man. You've been in the music game for many, many, many years. And really what I want the audience to know and to learn is your journey, because you have a very, very interesting journey. We all do. We all have a story to share. And I think one of the things that I've really realized, or that we're not talking about, you are the first Latino hip-hop artist that really blended the hip-hop culture with the Latino culture and
took it global.
And took it global. There you go.
If I'm the godfather, there is a grandfather.
Ooh.
And the grandfather of it all is my friend now, Mr. Schick of the Mean Machine, where I've been saying this for 35 years. If you follow my interviews on early Power 106 or wherever I was, I've been saying this for hundreds of years.
I like that, the grandfather. I'm taking that from you. I am the godfather of nightlife, but there is a grandfather.
There is a grandfather, right? And so we got to always make sure that we give credit where credit is due, and I always try to give that to Mr. Schick, because he showed me my path. Mm. And what I mean by that is he did a small little Spanish rap in an all-English record back in 1981 on Sugar Hill Records.
Oh, wow. Okay.
When I heard it, I said, I'm going to create a whole song, not just a little piece.
Yes.
So I did the first all-Spanish rap record. Then I got more creative, and I said, how can I make this different? Well, actually, it was Tony G's idea. He said, come back to the studio with this one bilingual.
Okay.
And that's how I wrote Mentirosa and created that bilingual style. Or we call it Spanglish.
And where were you living at? Where was this all being brewed? Because you're not from L.A., right, my brother? I mean, you weren't raised in L.A.
I'm a Cuban refugee.
Okay. All right.
I came over in 1971. I swam here. No, just kidding.
That's a long swim.
That would have been 90 mile swim to be correct. But no, I actually won the Cuban lottery to get my family off the island.
Nice.
It's like you play the lottery, you hit the numbers, and you win, right?
Yeah.
In Cuba, they were doing that to get off the island. If a certain family member had a certain number when he's born, and you can leave.
Wow.
And okay. So I hit that, and then we landed in Southgate, California, and that's where I started to hone my skills.
So you bypassed Florida, or did you?
We got claimed in Florida.
We got to give Florida some credit, man.
Absolutely. But I spent small time there. I mean, we got claimed by an uncle, my Uncle Robert, who then took us to their house. I believe it was in Elizabeth, New Jersey.
Okay.
From there. And we were trying to figure out, my parents and the government were talking about where we wanted to live, and my parents chose California.
Wow.
Because they said, okay, we don't like snow because we're Caribbean people.
Yeah.
So we don't want to be in New York. We don't want to be in Chicago.
Yeah.
And they said, well, what happens in California? They said, well, the ground shakes every 20 years. And they were like, let's go there. You know what I mean? Let's go there. We'll take some chances with that, and that's where we relocated to.
Yeah, so that's right, because, there's a lot of history in Southgate. with you and your one of your family members and the whole crew. I mean, I'll let you tell that story because I find it very amazing. Again, growing up in the streets of L.A., seeing how music influenced us as young kids. I mean, I'm 47 years old, man, and started at a young age in the world. I got to see. I wasn't playing with toys or having them. I had to grow up at a very young age and start to get my hustle on because I was just tired of being. Well, I was tired of seeing my mom. I grew up with a single mom, and I was just tired of seeing or hearing that she couldn't afford things or that we couldn't have the cool shoes or the cool clothes. And kids are fucking brutal, man. And I mean, even today, I mean, but back then, the teasing, right? So for me, it was, I used that as my motivation to take it to the next level.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. So for me, it was, and that's part of what the roots are for me that today is I use those past experiences to just, hey, there is no to me and there is no, I can't, no, I will do it. And if not, I will find a way. And I continue to share that with the world because that's really what I want to do. And that's why today we're here and I'm just fascinated because to have an icon like you in the Latino community, the hip hop community, we just celebrated 50 years of hip hop last year. And I think they missed a few. They how about the Latin hip hop culture, all the big influences that the Latinos had also in the hip hop community. I mean, we grew up growing up in L.A., we got to see N.W.A. develop, Ice Cube, Dr. Dre, Cypress Hill, all the different Latin artists that started coming out after that. And I know you're gonna be able to share that history with us. I mean, there's a lot of great history with people. They did your stuff. I mean, you're one of the top songs in the world. Mentirosa was like the hottest track at all the hottest nightclubs. I mean, you walked in and it was on.
Yeah, I mean, crazy. I mean. You mentioned a lot of different things.
Yeah.
And I can go in a lot of different places.
Because
here.
It was all happening at the same time, right?
Well, I mean, first you mentioned, you know, the struggle, right?
Yes.
Growing up in a single parent household, yes. Right? I had the luxury of having both parents. But one thing that I had as my ace in the hole was since I won the Cuban lottery for my family, my family used to call me the Lucky Charm as a young boy.
Mm.
So I always felt like I was destined for something. And when the gangs came trying to recruit me and things like that would come, I was able to sidestep that by knowing that I had a greater calling.
Yes.
Right? Cubans come to this country a lot like many other Latino families. We come here to prove a point. If given an opportunity, we will be better and we can do much more than our own countries was letting us be.
That's right.
I'm no different. I grew up with that Lucky Charm tag, so I felt like, okay, maybe not like an arrogant, like, oh, I'm better than you,
right.
But no, I have a purpose. I can't do that.
Yes.
I'm going somewhere. I can't join you.
That's right.
And along with one other guy, there was one cholo in my neighborhood. His name was Leonard. He ultimately blew his own head away in a game of Russian roulette at a ditching party, but he kept a lot of the gangs away from me. And I'll never forget his name. He died in 1979, but I'll never forget because he kept all them dudes, leave him alone, leave him alone. If I see you stepping to him, I'm, you know. And Leonard, rest his soul, man, he really helped me to, like I said, I had to sidestep him, but Leonard was also there to go the fuck out the way. So that's for me how I was able to stay focused, locked in.
Yes.
Wasn't a very good student at all. Wasn't smart in class. I was a class clown because I was behind the learning curve a lot.
Yeah.
Coming as a Cuban refugee, my English was like Sammy Sosa.
Yeah.
Baseball has been very, very good to me. Yeah. Not liking the girl.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have one cup of coffee, my friend, shit like that. We were the Cuban refugees, so we had nothing.
Yeah.
We had the Skips, the off-brand shoes.
Yes.
Me and my brother shared pants on Wednesdays and Thursdays. You know what I mean? So we had the hand-me-downs and the whole thing. And so for me, it was embarrassing back then because, you know, kids are brutal. Kids are brutal. And in junior high school, especially, you get ridiculed for not having Adidas, Nike, Pony.
Jordans at that time. Oh, yeah, it was crazy. Crazy shit.
Now, I'm 56 years old, so I'm a little older than you, so the brands were different.
But
they evolved.
Yeah.
Doing that, it helped me to understand, like, one day, I'm going to have a wall of white shoes and nobody could tell me shit.
That's right.
And I'm going to grow up and I'm going to buy every freaking white pair of shoes I could buy.
Yeah.
So today, if you go to my house,
yep,
I have that wall now just to prove a point.
Yeah.
Fuck all you motherfuckers
that
laughed at me in junior high.
Yep.
I don't know.
I did the same thing, by the way. I got to the point where I bought me a pair of Air Jordans that I wanted, and they cost me a fortune, but I didn't give a shit. And they're sitting in a box, and I know where they're at.
Yeah.
And it was just, it did something for me just to reinforce that as little as it was something very big for me.
Sure.
The pinnacles that I've had in my life, when I've reached certain parts, it's because nothing was going to stop me. Nothing was going to hold me back.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I felt the same way. I got 8 pair of them now. They're all $350. You can only wear one at a time.
That's right.
So.
I tell that to people that have multiple, like, I lived that life of excess in at a young point. My path growing up out of L.A., joining the nightclub scenes, like, I have a similar person in my life that was very, his name is Martin Green Eyes, and he was big in the nightlife industry in L.A., and he was that guy that protected me from, I saw all the drugs, I saw all the craziness, the glitz and glamour of the nightlife, and I was always the kid that, and he would, kept me away from all of that stuff, but always allowed me to be, like, and I mean, I was a kid going into these nightclubs, Fantasia's in Buena Hills, Peppers in City
of
Industry. What was the other one? Red Onions was my first nightclub that I
went
to in West Covina.
Yeah. Florentine Gardens,
yeah. And in West Hollywood. I mean, all the nightclubs. I mean, that's
Peppers.
Peppers in City of Industry. Yeah.
If the walls could talk.
Oh my God.
If the walls could talk.
I love it. I was one of my friends now, partner. We're still friends and partners. John Pena from Boss Entertainment.
I've known John for many years.
Right here, I still wear it on me. I got my bracelet with Boss on it, and that just goes back. We founded that back in 1994.
Get down.
And 19. Damn, man, it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's so.
We've seen a few come and go, too.
Yeah, we've seen
Robert Torres, rest in peace.
Yeah, no, the guy that got me into the game was Cesar De Niro from the Teddy Boys.
Cesar De Niro, of course.
There was Lewis and Sergio Romo.
Of course, still know those boys.
Yeah, so I see them on social media, but obviously I've been away from the Bay, I mean, from L.A. for so long. I moved up to the Bay. Crazy story. I wrote about it in my book. When we lost everything, too, my mom, again, just the instability of where we were at in life, I ended up here because literally I almost killed somebody when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And it was one of those things of growing up in the streets. I was exposed to a lot of gangs when I was a kid, but I never was a part of it because I just knew I had a bigger calling, right? Mm-hmm. God was guiding me and telling me that I belonged to do other and greater things. When that situation came up, man, where life challenged me, and literally I was about to crack this guy in the head because one night he was, in the early 90s, PCP was a big thing, and these kids used to lace up their joints with PCP. And I don't know what that stuff ever did, but that, from what I saw, man, it made people go crazy. So one day I came home from academy and calling me names, you spick, wetback, fucking blah. I'm just, and that thing fired me up. I was like, oh, no, motherfucker. I'm going to show you what the streets have taught me. And I literally was going to crack it. Back in the day, the Chronic was, I could even hear the song, the Chronic, on the background, where I was going to grab the bat and just crack this dude in the head just for the insults. It wasn't because that's who I am, but it was such a painful time in my life to be reminded. Mm. But again, I used that as my therapy and my rocket fuel to keep catapulting me to where I'm at today. Similar to the experiences that you probably had.
Well, I've done PCP, so I know exactly what it feels like.
There you go. So I have no clue of that. I mean, yeah, just, but again, life in the fast lane, right? We music, the industry, we jumped onto this track now of life in the fast lane, entertainment, the glitz, the glamour, the money.
Well, for me and my crew, Cypress Hill, look, none of us graduated high school, okay? We've accomplished everything we have without a high school diploma. But one thing we did do, we were experimental. We were very experienced when it came to trying things for the first time.
Yeah.
We were dipping and dabbing into anything and everything that we could get our hands on. Hence, when they came out, the marijuana was the thing for them.
Right.
Right. And so we became very experienced in the streets. We had a lot of friends that were connected, whether they were in Mexican gangs or black gangs, the Bloods, the Crips, all of that. I think for us, the main ingredient of it all was always the music.
Yes.
The dancing, the being able to DJ. These things, these gifts, if you want to call them, that you have to sharpen yourself, right? They don't happen by themselves. These things, that was the key to opening the globe for us. And so for any kid who's watching right now, if you come from, whether it's a single parent household or you're a refugee and you just got here 2 years ago, you don't know what you want to do, listen to what your heart is saying to you to do. Follow your heart, because your heart doesn't lie.
Mm-hmm.
It won't lie to somebody else, but it won't lie to yourself. And if you follow that, I think you'll have a recipe for success, because once you set your mindset to something, you're usually going to accomplish it.
Yeah.
Whether you just want to be a piece of shit on the street or somebody of importance.
Yeah.
It takes energy to be both.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And luckily, we took paths. Again, I say they're similar paths. I took the route of energy, of positive energy, and I, at a young age, again, God was exposed. My mom luckily wanted to keep exposing me to better things, and she did. And part of the reason why when I hit that fork in my life of, do I join the gangs and kick it with the gangs, or join these pretty boy promoters and go have fun and live a positive life, I chose the fun party life, because to me, L.A. gangs and being in that scene, it was either drugs or being killed or in jail. And that wasn't where my mindset was at. That's not where God was taking me. Right. I know there was something bigger that was guiding me at that time in my life. So yeah, it just, I chose the path of nightlife. And for me, passing out flyers and getting into the nightclubs and hanging out in the VIPs was my excitement. But that also came... That also developed into a lifestyle that I started to become as I got successful in the industry. When I left L.A. and I came to the Bay, I was the only Latino promoter with that Latino edge and vibe.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I brought that street experience, that just excitement, and that is what got me to where I became a dominator in the nightlife scene in the Bay Area. Started in San Francisco, and then I found my home here in San Jose and dominated. I made my first million at 25. I mean, I was killing it. 28 multimillionaire, fucking rolling in a Ferrari 360 Spider. Life was going fast. Sex, drugs, rock and roll. My first exposure to a version of a Latin kind of hip hop, not even hip hop, but now it's called reggaeton, but reggae, Latin reggae, was El General, Buntum Mami Mami. I mean, all of his tracks were dope, and then I think, like you said, you took it to the global level with your stuff. So yeah, man, it's crazy experiences, crazy times, man. But we're here today, and we continue to rock it. Last night you rocked it. I love the energy.
Thank you.
You brought your partner. She was she did the Chaka Khan song. Man, I was like, and that's Chaka Khan is one of my favorite songs. And I grew up and that's an 80s song. I remember I was like 8 years old when that song, and Chaka Khan, that energy of that song, man, just, so she took me down memory lane for a quick minute, and I was like, oh man.
Well, that's why we do that part of the show. The show, as I entertain, for the last 35 years, I've always tried to have a theme to the show, a theme that I could follow. And at the theme that where I'm at now, it's basically, it's all about good music.
Yes, I caught that last night.
So
man.
I beat that into your head subconsciously.
Yes.
And it's all about good music.
I got that.
When you leave the show,
yes,
you're talking to your partner, it's all about good music, babe.
Yeah.
What the fuck, what's going on today?
And yeah.
These kids don't know, whatever, right? So having Abby there do that part of the show, it makes absolute sense.
yeah.
for me. So shout out to Abby Losis, who's over here in the corner over
yeah,
here.
Yeah, no, she was amazing. That her voice, she hit it. I was like, oh man,
I'm like, she's always trying to get me to change the song. Like we've been running it for a year now, a year and a half maybe. And I'm like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Yeah. She wants to change it to something by Tina Marie.
No.
Said, if you change that to Tina Marie, you better stick the landing on that completely, because Latino fans are really crazy. They'll throw shit at you if you don't stick Tina Marie.
No, the show was fire, man. Talk to me about that. I mean, so let's take a step back, though, too, because you went global, obviously, in your early career.
Just a young man.
Yeah, man. Yeah. I mean, before you got here, for some inspiration, I was playing Mentirosa. I was just, and then I looked at you had this baby face, bro. I was like, oh man. I'm like, obviously we all age and we transform a little bit, right? Life. But talk to me about what was going on through you in that point. Cause we touched a bit about it. Obviously you and the people that were around you, man, were pivotal.
I'm going to paint it to you this way.
Yeah. Please.
Have you ever wondered what it was like to be Elvis Presley for a day?
No, I've never.
How about Michael Jackson?
Yes, Michael Jackson, okay. Yes.
For me, I don't know if it was Michael Jackson-like, you know, size, but it was just underneath that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Imagine you're a Cuban refugee, you got nothing, you grow up very little, now you come up with an idea like your punching bag that it has the potential to make you a godzillionaire or whatever,
yes,
right?
Yes, okay. Yes, yes.
Imagine going as a 20-year-old to Colombia, Puerto Rico, Costa Rica, Panama, yada, 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 yada. And everywhere you go, before you even get off the tarmac, this was before they had that tunnel from the airport to the plane like they do now. No, you had to go down the stairs of the airplane, walk the tarmac, and then you go up the 200-300 journalists waiting for you at the tarmac, to where you couldn't even get to the ramp without giving them all their interviews, because they're not going to have it. You came this far.
Yeah.
We want our interview. So imagine that. Your crew has gone to the hotel hours ago, and you're still there doing the interview.
Wow.
At the airport. The next day, you wake up, and you got a mountain this high of newspapers in front of your hotel door. All the interviews you did last night, they ran them, pressed them, and had them ready for the people the next morning. And till you felt that type of, like, you know, or seen that, like you said, or the time I'm in Colombia and we're getting ready to go on, I'm opening up for Air Supply. 60,000-seater Estadio Nacional.
Mm-hmm.
A bomb, an explosion goes off. Turns out Pablo Escobar's people, cartel, blew up a military Jeep. Here, me and my team are thinking, we came all this way, there's no show.
No, the party's still going to go.
Promoter walks in. Hey, you're on in 5 minutes. Me and my team are looking at you like, what the hell? I ain't going out there. They blew up some shit. And they're like, no, this happens here all the time.
It happens all the time. It's normal.
It was normal. And if you go out in front of 60,000 after you just experienced that, I mean, it shook the whole stadium, bro.
Yeah, fuck that, it. That just
changed me.
Yeah, it's got to desensitize you.
It's probably
you.
The reason why I have anxiety now.
Yeah, PTSD. Know. PTSD yes, right there, man.
Absolutely.
You're going through some war zones.
Imagine that. At 20, it'll change you. It'll change you a little bit.
Yeah.
You know? And so you do the best you can. Try to remain humble, and you try to be peaceful and show love to the people, and hopefully it's reciprocated and giving back to you. And I think I've been able to make a career like that. I think having longevity in the music business, when you have a classic, okay, great, but there's more to it.
That's right.
You have to put it all together. You have to sell the T-shirt. You have to do the show. You have to come do the interview. You have to come with the other idea. You have to.
Yeah, it's an art.
You put it all together with the royalty checks that come in, and you put it all together, and lo and behold, somehow, music's aura was there to thank me.
Yes.
When times, you didn't know whether how long this success thing would last.
Right.
Because when you're young, when you're 20, 21, oh no, I'll be famous forever. This is not gonna stop. Fuck all that, you know. Fuck you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yes. Fuck. Oh man. Yes.
And so you think it won't come to an end, and then one day your record fades to black.
Oof. Yeah.
And here comes the next batch of kids.
Oh.
You know, the Tribe Called Quest.
And yes.
And the Cypress Hills and the Black Sheep and the Dos Effects and you're like, holy shit. Hold the boat. I'm not done.
We're not done.
I haven't finished my 15 minutes. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And now you're going to shoot more hot shit out here?
Yeah.
And so now you start looking at as a competition thing. How many units did you sell? How many cash registers are you turning around the country? How many radio stations have you on rotation? And every number counts, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you start to experience that for the first time, and you start to go, wow, this is really a business.
Yeah, well, yes.
No, well, when you first get in and you're rapping and you're doing your thing, you don't look at it like that. It's like, where the bitch is at? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, for real. I'm not trying to be.
No.
It's like you in the nightclub. Don't tell me.
Oh, I'm going to tell you.
You did the clubs and once you said, where the hoes at? Come on.
Hey,
let's keep it real.
I catered to females. That's why my nightclubs were all 80% of it was filled with females and they all got in for free.
I know. You ran with John Pena. Yeah. I know exactly who the fuck. I know.
It's funny you say that because you're right. There's your version, and then there's a version that I had on the operator owner power side of it, right? I always tell people pre-2008, Mauricio, because 2008 was the point of my life where it imploded. I went from Ferrari to Ford Focus. So I had too many cars that I can only drive one. I had a fish tank, Mello. It was a 350-gallon saltwater fish tank with a baby black tip shark. First of all, they're illegal.
Yeah.
They look like little mini great whites.
You and Ice-T are the only two cats I know I ever had one. Yes.
Hey, I had that shark, and that motherfucker actually used to give me anxiety, right? I'd come back home from the night, and I'm fucking on one, right? I'm like, oh, shit, this fucking shark doesn't want to stand still? I'm like, it was fucking bananas, man.
Yeah,
in that fast lane. You're right. It's not forever, and there was the, hey, fuck you guys, fuck
there's
whatever,
also,
dude.
There's also an adrenaline thing that happens.
It's the dopamine. It's like today's
it's
likes.
It's the dopamine, you're right.
It's like the likes.
Because one day you could be in front of 60,000 people, but when that record fades to black, you're now only in front of 150 people who may have come to that show.
Yeah.
And they're like, damn, Mellow Man Ace. They're still treating you like a king. Inside, you go, God damn, I was just rocking 60K.
Yeah.
How does this happen? It's a weird dynamic.
Yeah. Oh, I felt it too when I faded out of the nightlife. I was like,
yeah, right?
Motherfuckers, like, I was rocking 10,000 people every 5,000 every week.
You know, you do an event and the 25, 30 people.
I'm like, what the fuck? You know who I am? I'm Mauricio Mejia, motherfuckers. What the fuck? What's going on? And I'm the greatest promoter of all time, right? I'm just that. But it's the fucking bullshit we fed ourselves. And then when life catches up and the next batch of promoters, the next batch of artists.
There's always that next batch. And they're hungry.
Yeah.
And they want to take your head off.
Yes. Yes.
They do. They want to shit on you.
Yes.
They didn't like it. That, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That it wasn't them.
I call it the Benny from the Bronx. Benny Blanco fucking move, right? In Carlito's way, right? He shunned them. And then what happened? He shanked them.
Got him in the end.
In the end. So it just, life. I love it though. I pivoted along the way because I also knew that what I wanted to do in my life and I wanted to diversify. In the nightlife, I pivoted. I put my money into real estate, into other investments.
Sure.
So for me, I would always tell people, I'm like Batman. I'm Bruce Wayne during the day. And Batman at night. I had it going on. I was disciplined. Luckily for me, my vices didn't take me out of the game.
Who was your mentor in that?
So my mentor, his name was Harry Evans. Harry Evans was the godfather, now grandfather, right? He was the godfather of nightlife in the Bay Area. Literally, He is immigrant out of Iran, came to the United States, went to USC, graduated in cinematography, aka pornography. I tell them, I was like, come on, you're a director, right? I'm like, I'm looking at this fucking dude. I'm like, oh man, he just had the look. But I love him. He became my mentor here in the Bay Area. And for me, having a mentor and then having the open checkbook to do and experiment and create the things that were just coming out of my mind to stay above everybody.
Like, this guy's still around?
Yeah.
I need a loan. Goddamn.
No, I got you, bro. We're going to be talking some business here. This is where some great ideas start. Yeah, but he's still around. He's 86 years old.
Good Lord.
I'm actually going to be bringing him on the show. I want to talk about, and I'm going to coin that. Harry, you're the grandfather and I'm the godfather now. Yeah. Yes. And sure. And we talk about that, about nightlife and the stories that he shared. I mean, man, it's crazy because he knows. You guys have probably all performed for him back in the day in the early 90s when you came up through the Bay Area. Sure. Because I know your songs. I mean, you were probably at the Paradise Beach up here.
KMEL jams.
Yeah, all the KMEL jams, the Studio 47 events, the San Francisco nightclubs.
Did that.
So I know that your fingerprints are all over the Bay. Your influence is all over
the
Bay.
I'm one of the lucky ones, really, because I never put myself out there in a way that represented anything other than good times.
Good times, good music.
You know
what I mean?
Good music, good times, and a positive vibe. My thing was always peace, wherever I went. And I still have an open door up here and get so much love. I always used to say the best place to perform is San Jose, California.
There you go.
said it 1,000 times. They asked me, what's the best place you ever perform? I always bring it back to San Jose.
Yeah, we're gonna be working on some stuff. I know that the last couple of times I've missed it because it's just timing right now, right? The last couple of years have been weird, obviously coming out of COVID. This year, 2024, we've locked up 8 block parties. We're working on 2 concerts, and in one of those, we're working on the themes, right? Because we can't strike on these. Even though if we strike, it's okay. They're learning lessons. But last night was to see you and connect and see the energy. And then bringing along
the party started.
You did. It should have been the opposite. We should have had Rodney O and Joe Cooley open up and then you close it because I told you in my heart of hearts, you're the headliner, right?
Right. There was some mechanical issues backstage and I made that executive decision. I'll go first.
And that was it all worked out. At the end, it all worked out.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, everyone had a great time. And we made it today, and we're here to talk about it. But yeah, man, it's I've always.
So you were scouting. You were scouting.
Yes.
I read between the lines that you were scouting me to see how I'm still doing.
Hey.
No, look. I'll be perfectly honest with you. During COVID, you mentioned COVID a little bit ago.
Yeah.
During COVID, I did something that most artists wasn't doing. Number one, I was playing a lot of golf, okay? A lot of golf because golf courses was the only thing that was open. But number two, I reached out to Abby because I saw her on Facebook one day and she was playing percussion. And I said, man, why don't I take this time to learn percussion? Her being a music teacher for many years, piano, guitar, all these other instruments, she said, yeah, I charge this much money. I was like, yeah, let's go per hour. So I learned, she taught me how to play congas.
Nice.
And since the bongos are very similar, just smaller.
Yeah.
I learned those at the same time, following along the same way. So I took the time to learn 2 instruments during COVID. No, and I didn't post it on social media that I was learning this because I didn't want the Kid Frosts. I didn't want the Rodney O's. I didn't want the DJ Quicks. I didn't want nobody knowing that when COVID is over,
I'm coming
at you motherfuckers. With this type of steam, right?
Yeah.
MC Magic, all of them can get it. Baby Bash.
Yeah.
They're all my boys. I love them, but I'm saying, like, I'm working on something to come back to not just be a one-trick pony.
Yes.
You feel me? Like, I want to show an artistic growth in this downtime.
Yes.
And that's what I did. So what you saw last night was a manifestation of those thoughts that happened during COVID.
You said something right now that just, it's, I'm a big believer that timing and nothing is coincidence. You and I have been trying to fucking get together for now about 2 years. We got introduced through Alex Mejia. I think John, I want to say, is it Serrano? John, he's out of here. He's out of the Bay Area. He's on a radio station.
I want to say it was for that show, Napa Valley.
No. I was not. Anyways, there's a cat on the radio out here, John, who introduced us, and then that's how we started getting the ball rolling. I got you on my show, and then we just started talking. What I like, what you just said right now, is that you are now a curator of the way that you want to put all of this stuff together. And if you and I can work together and put an event together here in the South Bay and in San Jose, where we curate. Right now, the only guy that's doing it is Alan Beck. And
right.
Much respect.
Love you, Alan.
Yeah.
Love you, Alan. We're coming to take your fucking head off,
hey,
Alan.
All right. You said it, and you're my partner in it.
I'd love to do it. Absolutely.
Yeah, the freestyle stuff and the shows that have been put on, I always feel that there's a disjustice to the community when shit is being put half-assed.
I can't agree with you more. Here's why. When you go to these concerts, look in the crowd. It's an all-Latino, Mexican predominant crowd.
Yeah.
Yet you don't have enough Latino representation on stage.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've been watching for many years, you know what I mean? And it's an unjust talent pool, if you will. I mean,
well, it's political, man. It gets at the end of the day, some of the groups will sell out, right? They'll like, "Oh, if this person's not doing it, I ain't going to fuck with you," or if it's not an AEG Live Nation or some big boys.
Well, I mean, I just think that they do more of a let me show you who I think is cool and fuck everybody else. Right. Like, you're gatekeeping.
Right.
You're gatekeeping. Like, who's to tell you that I'm better than Kid Frost or that MC Magic is better than me? Like, where do you get off?
Yeah.
Where do you get the fuck off thinking that you know how to pick and choose who's hotter?
Yeah.
Or who's going to be hot on your stage?
Right.
Because I'll tell you what, you put me in front of Lisa, or behind Lisa Trenier, and it's happened before, and I've blown the roof off and made the crowd forget them.
Yeah.
I love them. No.
Yeah, no,
and
I get
it. It's happened up here.
Yeah.
I love them. Those are my sisters, my queen sisters. I would never disrespect. I'm just keeping it $150.
Yeah.
Okay, my crew is here. They can tell you.
Yeah.
Okay? Put me behind anybody.
Yeah.
I don't give a fuck who it is, because what I lack in number of hits, I make up in personality and entertainment value.
That's right.
That you can't touch and they can't teach.
That's right. And it's the energy. It's the energy that we bring out, that energy. That's what sets me apart as well from others, right? Entrepreneurs and people that say, Mauricio, how do you juggle all these different businesses? It's because my work ethic is impeccable. And that's what it comes down to, is work ethic, right? And how bad do you want it? It's we don't need it's a Sunday and you're traveling, you're not even home. You're 500 miles away from home.
Yeah.
It's nonstop. This is important to me.
Yeah.
My being in the room with you is important to me.
Look, don't even compare us, because honestly, I've seen what you're doing in here. I'm not doing enough in my everyday life. I'm really not. Here's why. I love playing golf, man.
I love golf, too. I got him in my trunk, bro. I just don't have enough time.
Listen to me. I love the art of doing nothing.
Wow.
I do.
Yeah.
Smelling the roses outside in the beautiful Zen garden up there at the house, and just watching old mafia documentaries. I'm at that point. I'm at that part of my life where I could do that shit.
Yeah. Well, that's important.
I just love it.
That's important right now, and I think that's a highlight. You're at that point in your life. There's a 9-year, almost 10-year difference between us in age. I'm not. My ambitions are to become a Latino billionaire.
Well, yeah. Silicon Valley, of course.
I'm sure
all these kids, this guy here is already waking up like, I'm going to take your fucking studio one day.
Yeah.
I fucking hate you.
And if they don't, then I'm not doing my job.
Right.
Because my job is to fucking set the standard and to create different levels. And for me, I'm not done.
Yeah.
And I don't.
I'm not done either.
Saying. You're at a different level in life.
I just like playing golf, man. I do.
Hey, I'm coming down. It feels
like you hit a home run every time.
I'm actually going to be in L.A. in March. I'm doing an event at the convention center, a speaking engagement. I'm going to bring my golf clubs with me.
Yeah.
We're going golfing weekend.
Out.
We're
Let's
going
go
golfing out. That weekend. So, yeah, man, it's just, you're right. So my goal this year is in the entertainment and the events is I want to curate one of the most baddest events here in San Jose, and I need the help, right? And this is one of the biggest difficulties that I'm finding is that promoters are cock blocking these artists from working with other promoters. And that, and then it bothers me because then I go, perfect example, Pitbull. Before Pitbull became Pitbull, I used to pay Pitbull $10,000 to come and perform at my nightclubs. Sure. Well, one time, that 1 year in 90, fuck, what year was it? 96, 97, all of a sudden this motherfucker blows up. I called his agent. At the time, his name was Purple. Hey, Purple, what's up, bro? Fucking, I want to bring out Pitbull. He goes, bro, it's 250 grand. I said, 250 grand? Come on, dog. What happened with the player price? He goes, bro, that's what he's going for. He goes, as a matter of fact, you get him now because the next month he's going to be a $500,000. I was like, fuck. All right. I mean, I got it. I get what, but we're talking nightclubs, right? You know, so now you're priced out of the nightclub industry. Then when you try to step up and you try to get into like some of these artists that you help give them their moments on the smaller stages and then they get to the next level, then they get surrounded by these promoters that then start cock blocking, right? Yeah. They're like, hey, if you play for him, you can't.
Well, they'll start trying to lock the artist into an exclusive with them.
Right, exclusives with them.
And then if you do step out of that agreement, we're going to add the extra fluff for me.
Yes.
To let you go do it.
So that's right. So one of the things that I'm starting to realize, and this is why I'm getting very vocal about it now, and I'm starting to become very territorial with San Jose, because there is no promoter in San Jose right now other than me. I'm like the last one that's here. COVID wiped everybody out, right? I mean, not physically, but just wiped them out financially. Right. And I was able to survive and keep going. That now I want to curate some of the best events in the South Bay that anyone has done.
Sure.
I have the capital to do it. I have relationships here. The only relationship that I don't have is how to navigate into the artist world now, right?
Teacher.
That's right. That's right. So I've always had you at an arm's, like a phone call away, let's call it.
Yeah.
Because I know that if I want to tap into
my Rolodex is crazy.
If I want to tap,
you're probably looking at my phone and going, "If I only had that nigga's phone."
Well, hold on. If we put our phones close together, I might be able to hack your shit. So no. But the point is that we're only as good as our team, right? So my team, I got all the players that I need to have on my team to have a successful, at least the infrastructure, but to bring the talent, that's an art. And that's the art that you have. So you earlier said, I'm not doing enough. You don't have to do enough to make a lot. You just have to do a little bit to gain a lot.
Work smarter, not harder.
That's right. So you are going to be a part of this team. We're going to create a partnership.
Let's go.
No, done.
You see it? We got it on film?
We got it.
And hold. 2, 3, and let go.
Hey, he knows the drill. All right, hold. Everyone, cameras fixed. I'm a believer that we can rock San Jose.
I believe it too.
We can rock the South Bay and the relationships that we have.
The fan base is already here.
It's here.
Already proven.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, right ticket.
We just gotta put it together and we just gotta be able to navigate those political waters and the things that we'll do will be, hey, I'm not trying to get into the arena. I don't need to. I got a space that can hold 10,000 people too. And it's outdoors and we own it. So those are things again, when you own your own shit, you're like, all right, whatever.
Yeah, whatever needs to happen.
Go pay the arena those hundreds of thousands of dollars. Mm-hmm. While I'm going to pay myself because we own the property. So, I mean, just again, there's so many things. It's just trying to get dialed in. So, absolutely. Man, anyway, so... Yeah, we can keep going. I want to be mindful because I know you got to get back. You got pops back at home.
Yeah,
I appreciate that. When I heard you earlier, and family is something very big to you, I can.
Well, I mean, he's the only parent I have left. Mom left us October 2022. It's incredible to believe that it's been over a year, and so it's been a blessing to be able to take care of my dad, give him his 3 square meals a day, watch baseball with him, talk about old time Cuba and all these things, and give him his meds in the morning and be there for him to enjoy what's left.
You know? Yeah.
We're all destined to be there one day. But to me, aside from playing golf and shit like that, taking care of my pops is a big deal to me. We help each other in different ways. And I'll never forget these years that I've had him. I think it's going on 4 years, Diggy. I've had him for almost 4 years.
And nice.
He's my best friend. You know, he doesn't know it. He'll never admit it, but I will. And he's my best friend. And
well, I think it's important that you let him know.
Well, it's crazy because, look, he once kicked me out of the house at a young age.
Probably the best thing he did.
It was the best fucking thing. Yeah. I'm going to get to the reason why.
Probably the best thing.
At 19 years old, he wanted me to keep a job to keep him happy, bring shit home. I said, nah, I got to believe in myself. I'm going to go hang out in Hollywood, meet this one, meet that one.
Yeah.
All these people kicked me out, didn't give a shit. Anyway, in that interim, in that pocket of going and moving, and I meet the right people.
That's right.
I came back with a record that was pressed already. I said, Pops, I'm going to make it. Here's my first record.
Ooh.
Let me back in the house. Now, for a couple of years there, I resented that shit. You know what I mean? But you know, as the older you get and you start to realize, that was the best thing for me.
Best thing.
And so taking care of him now, knowing that he turned me into a man, it's a big deal, man. Yeah. It's emotional. It's heartstring section.
Best thing that ever happened to me is growing up the way I did.
My friend.
My brother. I appreciate
time,
you, man.
You
I love
two
you.
Hours,
yes.
All right.
We're going to go into it. Hey, thank you so much again. Thank you for you and the crew. Thank you so much. Thank you for being an inspiration.
Follow up.
We're going to make this thing happen, man. You got my word. I can't wait to bring our families together, our entertainment worlds together.
Let's go.
Because we're going to make some noise here in the Bay Area.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. I want to thank everyone for watching Mauricio Mejia Live, episode number 6.
Mauricio Mejia Live.